So let's start with this special session for the history of algorithmic randomness and complexity with a panel discussion by Klaus Schnorr, Alexander Shen, Christian Kalula, and Günther Hotz. So I'll introduce the subject with some general thoughts for your amusement about the history of probability. So probability among the big mathematical disciplines is a relative newcomer on the scene. The old Greeks and the old Romans had no idea of probability at all. They played dice, but they had no idea that there were certain laws, calculation laws, associated with the playing of dice. For example, they played dice usually with the heel bones of sheep, which have a very irregular form. So which side comes up depends on the particular heel bone involved, and also on the on the particular shape of that. But they also used exactly the same dice as we do, with exactly the same indication on the dice, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and with 7 points if you add two opposite sides. So you would think that if you do that, then you have a definite feeling for the probability of the matter, but no way. They felt that each throw was completely arbitrary and was up to blind chance as designed by the gods, and human reasoning or the human could not influence that. Cicero wrote an entire treatise about this matter called On Chance. That was the situation in terms of mathematical probability as related to gambling. On the other hand, the term probability or some equivalent was in great use, but that was in the Roman and Greek terminology, and in fact up to about 1500 in the West. This was probability was something which you used to find the sureness of things, like the existence of God or the credibility of witnesses, and the ways to influence that type of probability are sort of different from the ways to influence mathematical probability. So, for example, the credibility of witnesses is very much dependent on the social status of the witnesses. For example, if a professor in law testifies that he has seen a robbery and that this guy is the criminal, then this carries a completely different weight from when a drunkard from the street says the same thing in a court of law. And these subtleties of credibility and increase of probability about certain things, that is the particular use of the word probability in the old days. The use of the word probability in terms of mathematical probability is very, very new. So, to take a case in point, in the Inquisition times, the Inquisition had particular viewpoints about the probability of some people being heretics or holding a dissident viewpoint on religious matters. They had, degrees like suspicion, vehement suspicion, and so on. And then they would like to increase the probability of being able to give a correct verdict by, for example, admonishing the witnesses, showing the witnesses the instruments of torture. I think if there was vehement suspicion, then that was what he did. And if it was the further scale, then they actually tortured the suspect to extract more evidence and more probability of his guilt. For example, Galileo Galilei was shown the instruments of torture, but he was not tortured. So there was vehement suspicion against him, but not the next degree. And actually, he got off pretty lightly for considering that he fraudulently proved a theory, and that he fraudulently published his book on the subject under the imprint of the Vatican, when the Vatican had not really approved it. So then I a next thing is that let's see, so where are we now? Yes. So then we come, in fact, even much later, when mathematical probability already was sort of established. If you read the Essai sur la probabilité of Laplace, this is from 1810 or so, then most of the essay is about this type of probability, like the credibility of witnesses, how you should attribute credibility to witnesses, the weight of evidence, the fact that an authority is increases probability. And in fact, we use this in everyday life as scientists all the time. If some colleague, if some scientist which we respect says something like Gauss or so, or another guy, then we don't check the proof. If some student tells us that he has proved something interesting, we like to check the proof, because we don't give so much weight on the authority of the person. So we all the time in refereeing and whatever, we all the time are subject to proofs by authority. This is what we weigh, actually. In fact, I think Leonid Levin went so far as to say that when Kolmogorov had reputedly said something, this was the same as a written publication. So then we come to mathematical probability. Probably the first treatment of mathematical probability is due to Cardano in about 1500. So he, this was obviously obviously related to dice playing, to games of chance like card playing and dice playing, and that is fairly advanced. Pascal and Fermat had dealt with probability, but not too seriously. I think what mathematicians would consider a real mathematical treatment of probability was first given by Huygens, and then, of course, the major role is left here for Laplace, who really put the whole thing on a sound footing as we know it today. So now this is probability as related to gambling. So now the next phase of probability perhaps comes up with Hilbert's speech in 1900 for the so much International Conference of Mathematicians, where in Paris, where he in his speech, which he prepared for a very, very long time, which he wanted to be very, very important, he outlined the future of mathematics and for the next century, and identified the topics which he felt should keep mathematicians occupied in that century. So he, as problem number six, he mentions the treatment of mathematical discipline or physical disciplines which have a very large mathematical context, such as the calculus of probabilities and the theory of mechanics, which he wants to have treated in a mathematical manner, like let's say a series of a theory of classical thermodynamics, where you first determine some laws which are physical laws, which are codified physical experience, and then from these laws, on these laws you build a mathematical superstructure which take these laws as axioms. So thermodynamics example is the first law of thermodynamics: energy cannot be created out of nothing. This is sort of supported by abundant evidence of people who try to build perpetuum mobile of the first type. And then the second law, you cannot transport energy from a cold heat from a cold place to a warm place for the purpose of extracting work. This is supported by abundant experience of people who try to build perpetuum mobile of the second kind. So now Hilbert's challenge here was taken up by von Mises, and about 1919, where von Mises focused on the ground laws of a calculus of probabilities as being the notion of individual random objects. So for noted Hilbert viewed calculus of probabilities apparently as a physical discipline. In that vein, von Mises also wanted to account for the properties of physical randomness. So therefore he focused on the notion of the typical outcome of a physical random event, like the flipping of a coin. So an analogy to the first and the second law of thermodynamics, he codified two laws. The first is that if you flip a particular coin infinitely often, then the relative frequencies of ones should go to a definite limit. Like if the bias of the coin, let's say in modern language, if the bias of the coin is p in between 0 and 1, then in the limit you should get a fraction of 1 over p ones of the sequence. Now this of course is supported by experience. If you flip a coin, that as far as you can tell, this is the way it will go, because it seems to go. The longer you flip it, the more definite this value usually becomes. However, it's entirely possible that if you flip a physical coin infinitely often, that the relative frequency keeps on oscillating. We simply don't know. We cannot flip a coin infinitely often. And the second law was that, which he proposed, was that if you, according to a definite selection rule, select a subsequence, as you people tend to know, that the subsequence will have the same property as the original sequence, and it will go, the relative frequency of ones will go to the same limit as in the original sequence, which is the so-called law of the excluded gambling system. That is, a gambler cannot, by betting on next outcomes in the sequence, systematically make gain if he makes a simple bet. Now this created, as this audience well knows, lots of problems, especially notion of which were these particular strategies of gamblers which were excluded. If it would be all partial functions, then random sequences don't exist. Abraham Wald showed that if you take any countable set of selection functions, then such random sequences do exist, and they have, in fact, measure one. Then Church figured that if it's a countable set, why not effective? Because that corresponds more to the gamblers. So you take all Turing machines, and then Jean Ville showed in the first large-scale application of martingales that this leads to some counterintuitive results, that certain sequences are, for Mises, well, Church random, which stay on one side of where the relative probability stays on one side of one half forever. So if you bet according to a martingale, you make systematic gain. This is, roughly speaking, the situation which existed when Kolmogorov, who had in the 1930s proposed his easy definition of probability theory as part of measure theory, had sort of killed off the von Mises program, because mathematicians don't like difficult things, they like clean-cut mathematics, and Kolmogorov's proposal was clean-cut mathematics, and so that's what they did, but that had nothing to do with the physical substrate. So in the early 60s, Kolmogorov picked up again this line of thought and said that it was unavoidable that a physically related theory of probabilities should be according to the lines of von Mises, and he gave some proposals to that, first in a paper in Shankia in 1963, where he downscaled the von Mises proposal to finite sequences, and so computed the number of laws which would permit the definition of random sequences. Remember that in the Formesis case, they have counted be many laws, then there's many random infinite sequences. In Kolmogorov's case, if you have consider sequence of lengths n, he gives a formula for if you have this or this many, this of that many laws, it's a function of n, the deviation epsilon you allow, and things like that, then there are random sequences which are resistant to predictions by elements from that function. Then in that paper he sort of said, well, I have actually sort of what I think a more fundamental definition in mind, which is related to the theory of probabilities, and which theory of computation, and which I will produce in the next paper. And that's then the 65 paper, published a paper in which Kolmogorov complexity, as we know it, was formulated and the basic laws were proved. This was, of course, foreshadowed in a certain way by Solomonov's earlier publication, but that was rather about the associated probability distribution with purpose of induction, and Solomonov actually did not really talk about complexity at all.